Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach.
I love coaching these kids. The type of player that we get here and the type of effort that they give and the commitment they make, it makes it really enjoyable to be here.
The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and IMG and is brought to you by Wilson Sporting Goods. And now your host, Coach Dave Odom.
Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. Today's guest is the head coach of the BYU Cougars, Dave Rose. And Dave, you are a good friend and welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks a lot, Dave. It's good. Glad that I can spend some time with you.
Yeah, it is. And, of course, you've been a great friend of the NABC for a long time. And towards the end of the podcast, we want to talk a little bit about your relationship with them. But let me get things started a little bit by just congratulating you. I saw in one of the media outlets that you had signed a new contract extension out there at BYU. Not surprised about that. You've been in and around BYU all of your life. You're a native of Utah. You coached at a couple of high schools out there, Millard High School, Pine View High School, Dixie College, and now you're at BYU. Why all of that Utah stuff?
You know, that's a really good question. I was born in Southern California, and we lived there till I was in ninth grade. We moved to Houston, and I played all my high school ball in Houston, and then came out to Utah to a junior college, to Dixie College, and played there, and then went back to the University of Houston after I graduated from Dixie, and just happened to get there the same time that Clyde Drexler and Michael Young, and a year later, Akeem Olajuwon showed up. So I had some pretty good teammates, and we had some great teams. My senior year, played for the national championship and got beat at the last second shot from North Carolina State. And that was in Albuquerque. But then from there, I ended up taking a high school job back to Utah. And I've been in Utah ever since. It was in 1983. And, it seems like it was yesterday, but it was actually quite a long time ago.
Let's transition back to the Houston Cougar day. You really messed up my life, I can tell you that. I was assistant at the University of Virginia in that same year, and we had the great Ralph Sampson, you had the great Akeem Olajuwon, and others on both teams, and we had designs on winning the national championship. We had a couple of injuries in the ACC tournament that kept us from winning that. Jim Valvano was kind of at his highest moments there at North Carolina State. We play into the tournament, get all the way to Final Eight. We lose to North Carolina State for the second time in 3 weeks. We lost to them in the ACC tournament in the finals. And that sent them to Albuquerque where they were playing you guys. But, I go back in time even before that, Dave. Do you remember the trip to Japan?
Yeah, I sure do.
I mean,
yeah.
We played you guys over in Japan, and Sampson didn't play. He didn't travel well. He was, they said they needed some rest or something. And, we played you guys with all of your team, and we didn't have Sampson, and we won.
Yeah, it was kind of a letdown for us when we knew Ralph wasn't playing, and I think it kind of permeated through the whole team, I thought that you guys were going to be really, really good, because if you could beat us without Ralph, that you had something special there, and you actually did. Utah was in that too. How crazy is that?
Yeah,
Utah was over there with
they were the running Utes. Is that what they were called? Back in those Jerry Pym.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, it was really crazy. We were good. You were good. They were good. And it was, I tell that story often, because that trip, we win the two games. We beat Utah. We beat you guys. And then Terry Holland, our head coach, said, let's go back and we'll stop in Hawaii and kind of take a day or so break and let's everybody recover. We go back and, hey, by the way, while we're here, we'll play Chaminade. And, of course, we played Chaminade and got beat. And the most famous upset of all time at that time, and probably even today. So it was a memorable year, and of course, you guys ended up playing in the finals of the NCAA tournament. Played North Carolina State and Valvano, and I know you guys get tired of seeing the shot there at the end that never got to the basket that Lorenzo Charles caught and just put in. I mean, I know you get tired of seeing that. I know I do, because it should have been us, you know. But what was your feelings on that?
Well, you know, I think that we from that game when you guys beat us in Tokyo, we went home and won every game until that game. The championship game, we won 26 in a row. We were ranked number one in the country for probably 6, 7, 8 weeks in a row. And, we just thought we were just going to keep winning and win the whole thing. And when you don't lose for – that was in the middle of December, I think, you know, and we didn't lose until April. You just never think you're going to lose, you know, because that's all you do is just keep winning. So it was a shock to all of us and to our guys. And, you know, we were so highly favored going into the game. Everybody thought that the national championship game was the semifinals when we played Louisville and ended up beating them. And that was, I think, still one of the records is for a college game with the most dunks in the game. And really a great experience for me as a player. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen. People ask me all the time, what was it like playing with those guys, with Clyde, with Akeem, two of the, you know, greatest NBA players ever, the top 50 guys. And then, I mean, but it goes to Michael and it goes to Alvin and, you know, Larry Meshaw, Reed Geddes. I mean, we had a great team, but we were just a bunch of guys just trying to find our way and figure out how to get along with each other and put a team together and have team chemistry and win games. And all the real famous stuff happened after we left, you know? And so the experience is very similar to the experience that I have every year with my team. We're just a bunch of guys trying to find our way, see how good we can be and make a run as deep as we can.
You know, you bring up a point, and I was going to mention this anyway, but may as well do it right now. You were the co-captain of that team. And you did have a lot of personalities, and this was really – people got to remember now, this was in the early 80s, and all of this transferring and people coming in from different countries to kind of make up a basketball team, all of that was to happen later. You know, the Houston Cougar team in 1983 was kind of a forerunner of that. Tell us about the personalities on that basketball team. Akeem, what was Akeem Olajuwon – like in 1983?
You know, he was really quiet, kind of you know, not really sure of himself socially, but yeah, as a player on the floor he was dominant from the first day he got there, and he wasn't really that, you know, skilled. He played soccer all the way till he was about 17 years old, and then somebody, you know, got a basketball in his hand, he started playing basketball. So he had great footwork, you know, and he could really move around. I remember Coach Lewis was so excited every day. He'd come down and spend about 20 minutes with him in the post, before practice, just helping him, with things to get him going. And, you know, he developed that little dream shake where he would take that thing and kind of fake to the middle, then fall away to the baseline. And Coach Lewis hated that move. He thought that's the worst move you could possibly make as a, you know, 6'11", 7-foot guy. You need to take a power step and drop and, you know, go strong to the rim and get on top of that. And every time he'd take that thing in practice and shoot that little fall away, he'd get him out and run him on the sideline. I don't think Coach really knew how good he was going to be with that move, but it kind of became pretty famous across the world.
It really did. It really revolutionized, in part, you know, low post play with your back to the basket. It really did. I mean, it was no question about it. You mentioned Coach Guy Lewis, one of the truly great coaches in all of college basketball. What was it like playing for him?
You know, he's probably – one of the most competitive guys I've ever been around. And, you know, I had him late in his career. I think he coached maybe 2 or 3 years after we graduated. But at that age, he was still every bit as competitive you know, he was as a young player at the University of Houston. And that's what I remember about practice. They were 3 hours long. We'd put 20 minutes on a clock. We'd work on, you know, if we were working on, you know, half-court man offense or half-court man defense, or we had, little traps and some zones we'd run. And he'd put the time on the clock, and we'd compete and play and keep score. And the winners would, you know, get to go get a drink, and the losers would run. And that was every drill that we did. It was, you kept score. You made competitive, you know, practice out of every piece, and it led to some pretty, you know, highly confrontational, you know, days in practice. So a lot of days where guys were really, you know, get after each other and end up, you know, really competing. And I think that's probably of all the things that I learned from Coach is that how competitive, you know, practices need to be if you want to get the most out of your group.
Okay, so let's transition forward here. The year 2005, you were named the head coach at BYU. Your record's 329-122, great record there. At the time, BYU was in the Mountain West. You won the championship in 07, 08, 09, and 2011. Coach of the year in 06, 07, and 2011. You can tell I had a lot of help with all of that. Now, you know I wouldn't know that.
Yeah, that kind of statistician.
Pretty good, yeah, pretty good. And then in 2011, for some reason, BYU decided to go to the West Coast Athletic Conference. Tell us about that move. What's the difference in the two leagues?
You know, it's interesting how that all came about. It was a football decision. I think TCU and Utah left the Mountain West Conference, TCU to go to Big 12 and Utah to go to the Pac-12. And it kind of left us on our football program in a league that they were wondering if maybe they wanted to stay in. And then ESPN came in and offered a heck of a package to kind of help our football team. They signed a long-term deal, but they wanted to be able to schedule BYU all over the country, wherever, you know, because we've got kind of a not only a national following, but a worldwide following, and our TV ratings are really good no matter where we play, where we go. And so anyways, we ended up in the ESPN contract and independent as football, and we weren't allowed to stay in the Mountain West Conference. The conference said if your football team's not going to be in here, then you need to find a place for all the rest of your sports. And so that was an interesting, you know, 2 or 3 month period when the guys were trying to find a league for, you know, the rest of our sports. And we got 23 sports here. So it was kind of a big undertaking. And but the administration felt that it would be really good. And I think, you know, there's no question it's been a great financial move for us. I mean, we've had our athletic department has run smoothly for years financially. It has changed a lot of things as far as the rest of the sports and trying to compete. Obviously, the WCC for a basketball league is a good place, you know, to fall to because it's got a real national recognition because of Gonzaga. And Gonzaga has been a nationally ranked program for, you know, 20 plus years. And so when you talk about the WCC, I think everybody recognizes that from, you know, California to New York, it's got a national recognition to it. The problem is you got to play them. You got to figure out how to beat them. And, you know, for us, we've had some success against them. We beat them 3 years in a row up at their place, you know, during this time. Beat them when they were the number one ranked team in the country and had won 29 games in a row. And we're trying to finish out the season undefeated. We beat them on that last night of the regular season a couple years ago. So, we've been able to piece together some success against them, but we haven't been able to win the league. And that's, you know, that's something where, you know, we'd won the Mountain West Conference, I think 4 of the 6 years that we were in there. And, so, you know, now it's getting to be where, you know, we need to find a way to dethrone Zags, and that's getting tougher and tougher. I mean, they start the season this year ranked in the top 5 or so. And it just doesn't change. The people change, but, you know, the results don't change. Mark does an unbelievable job with that program.
You recently signed a contract extension. What makes BYU the place to stay, the place that you want to be? I know your family you know, most of your family was born there. You got a wonderful wife, beautiful wife in Cheryl. Where did you meet, and why is Utah and why is BYU home for you?
You know, I think that's a good question. I think every coach probably, you know, has gone through some really difficult decisions in their life trying to figure out what's the next step. And when we came to BYU, we felt we'd be here for a year or two, and then, you know, we'd move off and get our chance. I came here from Dixie College. It's now a four-year school. At the time that I was there, it was a junior college. I played at Dixie. That's where Cheryl and I met. And we married after our sophomore year, and then we went to Houston together. So she was with me through all the 3 years at Houston and through that magical run to the national championship. And I actually believe that, you know, it was a good time to have a wife in that situation going into being a coach. I mean, she knew all the ins and outs of the basketball world. And before I actually started coaching, and you know, coaching brings on a whole nother dynamic to your family, but she was used to, you know, to us, you know, in an athletic competitive situation. I think that you know, why we've stayed here, I think it's probably because it feels like home. This is a place where you know, all three of my kids have graduated from the same high school, and all three of my kids graduated from BYU. That's you know, not a lot of coaches can say that, and you know, usually the roadmap tells you, you know, where you've been, and you try to figure out everywhere. And I love coaching these kids. The type of player that we get here and the type of effort that they give and the commitment they make, it makes it, you know, really enjoyable to be here.
A couple of years ago, several years ago, you were diagnosed with cancer. And as everybody knows, I hope they know, one of the primary causes that the NABC and coaches in the NABC have taken up is the cause that we all call coaches versus cancer. Nobody is more involved from a personal standpoint and from a caring standpoint than the Rose family there at BYU. Tell us, obviously we know why you're involved, but tell us some of the things that you've done to try and bring awareness to cancer, not only from an athletic standpoint, coaching standpoint, but in a general popular standpoint. I know Cheryl's involved with all of these things that you do. Tell us a little bit about what you do and why you do it.
You know, it's interesting, Dave, because about the, you know, when I was coaching at Dixie, you know, 30 years ago, I had a member of the American Cancer Society come to me in my office there at Dixie and wanted to start a three-point challenge, and we started it, you know, way back then, 30 years ago, before there ever was an organized group of, you know, Norm Stewart's Coaches versus Cancer, and so we got involved a long time ago, and I've always, you know, had this kind of as a really important cause for us. Recently, it's really, you know, accelerated the importance of it because of my diagnosis of pancreatic cancer, you know, 9 years ago, and the experience that we went through as a family. Cheryl's had all of her sisters have had some type of cancer, and you know, one of her sisters actually passed away with cancer. So I think that those are reasons why we're involved. We were involved here. We started 20 years ago a little foundation to help children, families whose children have cancer here in the Valley. And we do a Christmas party for them every year and, you know, facilitate presents and gifts for the parents and the families at a really difficult time while they're trying to go through treatments and you know, try and celebrate Christmas. And that's probably, you know, my wife, you know, you mentioned Cheryl, she loves, there's a few things that she really loves. One is holidays, and Christmas is her favorite. And so, you know, we got involved with that. I've been doing that for years. And then a few years ago, we got involved with the Cancer Center here on campus, the Simmons Cancer Center for Research. And we were involved in the Infinity Coaches Charity Challenge last year and actually ended up winning the challenge and won $100,000 for the campus community Simmons Center here on campus. So We try to do as much as we can. We have a golf tournament here in town that supports our local Huntsman Cancer Institute, where I've been treated for the last 9 years. And there's a lot to you consider. There's a lot that we do, but there's a lot to be done. And I hope that we can prepare somebody, a set of doctors, for somebody's diagnosis 5 or 6 years from now, like someone prepared my doctors for when I was diagnosed, because it was a miracle the way they were able to find a way to get my cancer out of me and keep it out of me for at least, we're going on 10th year right now.
Wow, that's an amazing story in and of itself. Let's talk about the West Coast basketball in general, not just the West Coast Conference, but West Coast in general. You guys fight a big battle out there. I mean, people, once you get east of the Mississippi, people don't know what the heck is going on. They really don't. And it's not fair, because there's so many good teams out there, and you have great games, you have great fans. But let's face it, the games are played from an East Coast standpoint so late. You know, like I had to get up in the morning. The night that you played Nevada, first game of the year, I had to get up the next morning to find out. I couldn't stay up that late to see it. You know, I'm just an old man. Yeah. So, the lifestyle is different out that way. But there's so many good teams. And you've got good teams out there. You got the Pac-12, but you also got BYU. You got Gonzaga. You got St. Mary's. You got Nevada, New Mexico. There's a lot of good teams out there. Nobody knows it. What are the teams on the West Coast trying to do to bring more information and more awareness to those of us back east?
You know, that's a question that I think, you know, coaches and ADs have talked about for years. For us as coaches, we just kind of bury ourselves in our teams, you know, and try to have the very best teams that we can. And you know, we had a set of teams here in the Mountain West Conference a few years ago with San Diego State, when they had Kawhi Leonard and we had Jimmer. And, you know, they were in the top 10. We were in the top 5 or so at one time. And, it is hard to get real national recognition. The only way it can happen is to win. And I think teams like Arizona have continually won over the years, like Gonzaga. Where you have a program every year that your team's competing for Sweet 16s, you know, Elite 8s, Final 4s, and that'll kind of keep you on the map. I mean, you know, UCLA's got a heck of a history as far as their past is concerned, but they kind of go up and down. I think one thing that's difficult, and I don't really follow it as much on the East Coast, but it seems like West Coast kids, we get so many guys that leave early. You know, that makes it, I think, a lot tougher to keep that consistency year in and year out. You know, I do know that if you took the last 10 years or so and tried to find the most consistent program on the West Coast, you would probably be hard-pressed to find anybody better than Gonzaga, you know, the team right there in our league that we're trying to compete with every year.
You're known. I don't even know if you know this or not, but when I mentioned the name Dave Rose and BYU and back this way, they say, well, he's a really good offensive coach. Why is that? And maybe it's because your teams, by and large, are a little older. You don't you don't have the one and done stuff. You've got a different element because of the Mormon way of doing things. Explain that to us.
Well, you know, we have a lot of LDS kids on our team, and they the majority of those kids serve 2-year missions. The church actually changed the age of that mission a few years ago. It used to be you serve from 19 to 21, and now they moved it up to 18, where you can leave. So most of these kids leave right after high school. So, you know, we'll sign a few kids, next week, and they won't actually play for us for quite a while, to play their senior year and then, you know, serve a mission for a couple of years. It used to be they'd play a year and then go on their missions for 2 years. So we've dealt with, you know, a change in rosters and kids coming in and kids coming out. But I think that as far as offensively, The consistency that we've had over the years has a lot to do with who we recruit and what we, you know, what we feel like is our real advantage. And we recruit a really skilled kid, and so you know, the more shots we can get these skilled guys, I think the better chance we have to win. So we played at a pretty good pace, and you know, when we get a really skilled athletic kid, you know, then we've got ourselves, you know, an All-American candidate, or maybe even a Player of the Year candidate. You know, we've had two Players of the Year players here at BYU, you know, over the years. I think there's only like two or three teams in the country that have more than two, with Danny Ainge and Jimmer Fredette. So there's opportunity here, and we feel like, you know, we get the right player in here, and he can develop. And, you know, by the time he gets to be a junior and senior, he can be a heck of a player.
Dave, we're getting close to the end here. I wanted to mention to you that, you know, in 2008, you were awarded the NABC Guardian of the Game Award, which is a really prestigious award. It's given out at the Final Four. And you are in a select company with the people that have won that. And that award talks about or refers to the recipient as being someone who gives back to the game itself. Why do you think that's important?
Well, I really believe that I've been so blessed by this game, and not only as a player and my experience in college and have my education paid for, but, you know, my goodness, the 35 years that I've been coaching through it, the game's been really good to me, and I want it to be good to, you know, a whole lot of people that are coming forward. And the only way that's going to happen is if you find ways to improve it and make it better and to support it. And, you know, I do remember that service award that I received at the Final Four like it was yesterday. And I, of all the things that I've ever been through, all the speeches that I've ever gained, the groups that I've talked to, I've been back to Congress and talked to you know, people on Capitol Hill about trying to fund, get more cancer, you know, research funding, you know, across the country. The acceptance of that award with all those guys in that room might have been the most nervous I've ever been, because it's funny when I get around the guys that just make this game great, I just feel a real sense of you know, just respect. And I just want to be able to do the very most that I can do to help this game move forward.
Well, that's a great way to stop. I mean, you are certainly deserving of the award in 08, but, you know, you carry a lifelong legacy with you as you continue to coach. You and Cheryl put everything you've got into, you know, the game of basketball and the NABC. And I think those young coaches coming along have a lot to learn, and there's no better place to go than to BYU on your campus and get in your office and watch you in your classroom, which is your gymnasium out there. And so congratulations. We wish you the very best this year, Dave, as you go forward. So I want to say to everybody, thanks for tuning in to the NABC Guardian of the Game podcast and to Coach Rose. Hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have in talking to him. And so we want to thank you for taking the time to be with us. Good luck to your Cougars this year, Dave, and we'll be following you. And to our fans, we say, if you want to learn more about the NABC, then visit nabc.com.